So, tonight's talk, I thought to talk about death. The reason is simply that this is the sort of thing I think about myself quite a bit in my monastic life. It's the sort of thing I like to talk about because I reflect on these things myself. One of the things to understand when we talk about death is that from a Buddhist point of view, it's not a sad or a negative thing to think about. Actually, the purpose of talking about this and thinking about death is actually quite the opposite. It's to make you feel more at ease, more comfortable, more at peace, and even more happy inside of yourself. So it's a beautiful thing which comes from thinking about death in the right way, of course, not in the wrong way. It gives us all these beautiful spiritual qualities if we do this in the right way. This is the first thing you should then take into account, is that you should always, if you think about death, you should look at inside of yourself and see how you feel. If it makes you feel negative or anxious or upset or has some kind of negative consequence for you, then of course you're going to have to be careful with thinking about this. I remember a few years ago there was a lady who came up to me at the monastery and she said to me that, you know, sometimes I wake up in the middle of the night and I feel terrified about dying. While I'm sleeping, suddenly I have this thought and I wake up and I'm terrified of dying. And of course, I don't think many people are like that, but some people are like that. And if that is the case, you have to be very careful how you go about this sort of contemplation. Otherwise, you will cause enormous amount of suffering for yourself. So always, the way we decide whether a particular practice is good for us or bad for us is always whether it gives rise to good states of mind, to peace, joy, calm, all these beautiful things that we are trying to move towards in this practice we know as a Buddhist practice. So that is how you should decide for yourself whether it is working or not. And I always like to take my cue from the suttas, from what the Buddha taught. And the interesting thing is that the Buddha talked about death a lot in the sutta, something that he mentions again and again and again, something that he says we should contemplate and we should also use in our meditation practice to help us advance on the Buddhist path. And very interestingly, he said there's one particular place, he said that there are five contemplation that both a monastic and a layperson, if you like, or a householder, whatever you want to call the opposite of monastics, there's five things that we should contemplate frequently because it gives rise to great growth in good states. And one of those five is the thought of dying, to remind ourselves that we are also subject to dying, at least eventually. We don't know when, but eventually we're going to have to die as well. The other four things in that particular sutta are also to remind ourselves that we get sick, we get ill, to remind ourselves of old age, we move in that direction, to remind ourselves that we will eventually get departed from all the things that are pleasing and delightful to us, and finally that we are the heirs to our karma. In other words, the actions that we do, whether they're good or bad, we are going to have to reap the result of those actions in the future. These are the five things. And of those five things, I think the most central one, possibly, is death. Because death is something that the Buddha said in many, many places we should contemplate. So because it is such an important part of the Buddhist path, I like to both talk about this and obviously practice this sort of thing myself in my own life. So the first thing to remember, one of the beautiful things, one of the wonderful consequences of contemplating death, one of the first things that happen is that it sets our priorities in life very straight when you remind yourself that you're going to die. Because if you know that you're going to die, you don't want to invest so much in the things that are around you, whether it's material things or whatever it is that you are trying to accumulate in the life and build up in your life. Why invest so much in things that you know with absolute certainty you're going to have to give up? So this idea of death changes our priorities around. It makes us look at things in a new way, see things in a new light. And that is one of the powerful things that it does to us. It clarifies what is actually important in life. It doesn't delude us anymore into thinking that some of these superficial things that we're going to have to give up anyway, that these are really important. And it reminds us that what actually is important are the spiritual qualities in the mind. And it's almost like a natural instinct. Once you think of death, it changes your view of things almost straight away if you do it with a clear mind. It's an instinct. Suddenly you know what is right, what you should be doing. What you should be doing, of course, is the practice we know as a Buddhist practice. And it's very beautifully summarized on that statue, Buddha statue outside here. There's a verse on that Buddha statue on the column known as the Ovada Patimokkha. Ovada means like an exhortation. Patimokkha is like, Patimokkha for monks is like a sequence of rules and training rules we have to follow. And this Ovada Patimokkha is one of the maybe most succinct but still beautiful ways of capturing what Buddhism is all about. And it says that we should avoid doing that which is bad or evil. We should do what is good, and we should purify the mind. This is the teaching of the Buddhas. That is what it says, and that is Buddhism in a nutshell. So when I say that it clarifies the mind, it moves the mind towards those things which are part there of that Ovada Patimokkha verse. And there's one beautiful story which Ajahn Brahm tells, and I'm sure many of you may have heard this story before, but I think it's very pertinent when we talk about death. And this is the story of a businessman who lived in Sydney. I don't know when this was, probably many years ago. And he told this story to Ajahn Brahm at some stage. And he said that one day when he was at home, suddenly the phone rang. At the other end of the phone was his doctor. And the doctor says, "I've got some very serious news for you. Are you prepared? Are you ready to hear this very serious news?" After you had your, the doctor says to this businessman, "After you had your visit to me, a week ago or something, we did all the tests. We have found out that, in fact, those tests have revealed that you have a terminal cancer." This is the sort of thing many people get to hear in their lives. There's thousands and thousands and millions of people out there who are in that sort of situation. So the businessman, of course, like most people are, straight away, he was quite upset. Cancer, I don't really want cancer. I still thought I had many, many years ahead of me. But after a while, he realized that there's no point in going on complaining about this. Now was his chance to do all those things that he had put off because he had been so busy making money, climbing the career ladder, trying to do all those worldly things that most people get caught up in. So he then sold his business, and the first thing he did was to book some airline tickets at a nice destination overseas to take all his family with him and spend some quality time with his family, a family that he had neglected over many years because he was too busy doing other things which seemed important for him at the time. Just as the family was about to set off traveling overseas, he gets another call from his doctor. And the doctor says, "Well, this time I've got even more serious news for you. This is even worse than last time." And the man thinks, "Well, what on earth could that be? Surely terminal cancer is bad enough." And the doctor says there was been a very serious mix-up at the hospital. In fact, the test that we thought was yours was a test of somebody else. Somebody else got the cancer. You're actually 100% all right. Of course, at that point, some people might get very upset and very angry because they feel that they have, now they have sold their business, they made all these preparations, done all these things, so now the doctor says him is actually okay. He could have carried on as before. But this man, he was too wise to get upset. He just said, "Okay, fine, thank you for informing me." Then he went overseas, he had his holiday with his family, and then after that, he settled down into a very simple and easy life afterwards. Never went back on that career path, earning much money, but he had a very simple life. And he says, and he said to Ajahn Brahm, "I'm eternally grateful for that false alarm, because it reminded me that there are other things in life which are much more important than just thinking about money, thinking about career, but not actually really living in the present moment, not really doing those things which actually ultimately are important to me. So this is a classical case of somebody who understands through having to face death right in front of you, right in your face, understands that he needs to change his life because there are more important things. And sometimes we have to have this kind of threat almost right in front of us before we change the way we live, and before we actually think of the other aspects of life which are more important to us, in particular the spiritual part of life. And this is why we try to avoid that. We try to do that now by reflecting on death, thinking about death now, so we don't have to wait until we're sort of face to face with it, and then it becomes an enormous shock for us, which is very hard to deal with. The other day I had another man coming to the monastery. He's staying at the new retreat center we have over there. And he also was another cancer sufferer. And he came up to me and he said, "This cancer is the most wonderful thing that's ever happened to me." Of course, initially he said he was upset and angry and he felt it was terrible. And of course, most people do that. But afterwards, because he said, "I've been a Buddhist for a long time," I realized that this actually, after the initial shock was over, I started to change. And I could see myself changing because I knew I was going to die in a few months. I stopped getting so angry with people around me. How can you get angry in the face of death? It doesn't make any sense. You're going to depart from these people soon anyway. How can you get angry with them? You have to forgive them. This is like a natural response in us. We don't have to think, "I'm going to die, therefore I shouldn't get angry anymore." It's like it happens almost automatically inside of you. It's like some kind of mechanism which says, "Okay, put aside the anger," because it doesn't make any sense to be angry when you're faced with dying. And he also said he stopped having so many desires anymore. Now he felt much more like practicing the Dhamma, coming to the monastery, even ordaining, he said, even becoming an agarika, because he couldn't see the point of anything else in life. This is a beautiful thing that happens when people are faced with death, if they have a spiritual inclination. If you haven't got a spiritual inclination, this sort of death threat of death can be very, very challenging indeed, and you may not know exactly how to deal with it. And I've also seen, as a monk going to hospital sometimes, visiting people with cancers and all kinds of diseases, some people are very wise, and they become very, very peaceful on their deathbed. They become very relaxed, and you can see that because they have sort of accepted their destiny, it's like they have let go of something. They have let go of the striving that we all have in life to move forward, to move somewhere, to do something, to go in a different place. That they have given up because they know there is nowhere for them to go anymore. Where is there to go when you know you're going to die maybe in 48 hours, 36 hours, you're on the verge of death? There's nothing to do. And if you realize that in a deep sense, that there's nothing to do, there's nowhere to go, you let go. You abandon all those desires, all that clinging, all that attachment. You let it go, and then you feel at ease. You feel relaxed, maybe for the first time in your life. So this is the kind of thing that we can actually do right now. We don't have to wait till we are about to die. We can do it now by reflecting on death right here and now. Reminding ourselves that not only are we definitely going to die, we don't even know when we're going to die. It could be in a month's time, it could be next year, it could be next week. We just don't know. One of the most beautiful stories for me in the suttas is the Buddha's going forth when he decides that he wants to become a monk. What does the Buddha reflect on? What is the thing that makes him actually go forth? And of course, the powerful thing that changes the Buddha around from being a householder to being a monk is, first and foremost, the reflection of death, of dying. The Buddha reflects to himself, "Well, here I am, subject to death. I know I'm going to die, and yet I'm just indulging myself in sensual pleasures, having a good time because I come from a good family. How can I just keep going on indulging myself, attaching to all kind of things when I know that one day I'm going to die? If I don't deal with this death now, I'm going to have to pay the price for that in the future." So this was the main thing that made the Buddha himself seek a spiritual solution to the problem of suffering. Because, of course, death is one of those big sufferings in life that we're all faced with. And why? What is happening here? Why is it that the Buddha, when he reflects on death, suddenly he changes around and he wants to leave the household life and he wants to become a monk instead? What is actually going on here? What is actually the effect on the mind of thinking like this? And it's useful, I think, to understand that. What is happening here is that the Buddha, and he says this in another discourse, which is also found, which you can read for yourself if you like. He says that when I reflected on death in this way, I gave up that intoxication with life, intoxication with youth, intoxication with health. The intoxication of life is like when you run around, you say, the world is my oyster, I'm just going to have a good time. You feel particularly maybe when you're really young and you have lots of energy and you have lots of, you feel like you're the master of the universe, as one of famous book many years ago had of this Wall Street people. And you feel like you're in charge of your life and you can do whatever you like, whatever you want. In a sense, you're forgetting the reality. You're forgetting what life actually is all about. And you're living in this sphere where you think that this is like the eternal truth. This is going to be like this forever and ever after. It's like you're drunk on life. You are intoxicated, drunk on life, just like an alcoholic doesn't see straight. You don't see straight because of this intoxication. And it is this particular intoxication that is abandoned when we reflect on death in the right way. Suddenly, you know what it's like when intoxication is abandoned. Your mind becomes clearer. You see things straight, understand what is actually going on. You're no longer deluded. You're no longer seeing things which are not real, but you see things as they actually are. And this is the main purpose of this kind of death reflection. Suddenly, things clear up for you. Instead of running around like some sort of person which doesn't really reflect on life properly, you stop, you reflect, and you think, wow, I should be doing this instead. This is much more important. This is where I should be putting my energy. I should live a more spiritual life. It doesn't matter what you do, but it's how you live your life that is important. Leaning towards the spiritual qualities rather than just running after all the material things which most people do in this world of ours. So this is the power. This is what the Buddha saw when he was about to go forth and he became a monk. This is what he himself did. So, of course, if the Buddha did that and he recommended that we should do the same, then we can be absolutely sure that this is a very powerful way of acting. So that is how, by reflecting on death, we can actually get our priorities straightened out. And this is how I sometimes reflect on death. What I do when I'm by myself in my little cootie in the forest in a monastery in Serpentine, I remind myself that I have no idea how long I might live. I feel okay. I don't have any great physical problems. But still, there are lots of people out there who feel perfectly all right. But at this very moment, they might have a cancer growing inside of them. And I remind myself, perhaps I have a cancer growing inside of me. Perhaps I have a potential heart attack inside of me right now, which I just don't know about. And when I think like that, I think, well, what does that mean? When could I die? Could I die next week? Next month? And all of these things are possibilities. When I walk from my little hut in the forest back maybe to the main hall in the monastery, I could fall over. It's extremely slippery in that monastery. I have this Australian gravel, which is a bit like marbles. And I slide on this almost every day. I don't usually fall over, but I slide on these things all the time. And you never know what might happen if you fall in the dark on those things. You might hurt yourself. You could even die. This happens to people all the time. They fall over and they die. This could happen to me, or I could be bitten by a snake. I've seen lots and lots of snakes in the forest over there. It could happen easily if you're by yourself. Maybe you don't get to medical support in time. Maybe you might even die of that snake bite. And there's always surprises around the corner. There's a car coming there. There's always things which can happen to you. So I remind myself of these things. And then I think, and then I try to bring death as close as I possibly can and make it real. I could die this evening. I could die in an hour's time. I could maybe die even right here now. before I reach the end of this talk. That's powerful thinking, powerful thought. And bring it as close as you possibly can. And the closer you bring it, the more powerful that thought of death is going to be. And the more at ease and the more relaxed you will feel if you do it right, if it works, because it forces you to let go. It forces you to abandon things that you might otherwise be attached to. I also tell myself that I'm now, you know, I'm already well into my 40s. And I tell myself, well, I might still be not exactly ancient yet, but one day is going to be my death day. And one day could be just like today. And because one day could be just like today, might be my death day, if I'm not ready now, I might never be ready. It's either now or it's never. And again, that forces me to bring myself back into the present moment. This is all I've got. There's no point in desiring all kind of stuff out there, which I might never actually even have a chance to get to, even remotely. So these are some of the ways, some of the tricks to use to remind yourself of the life's dangers and the possibility that we might all pass away. Again, make sure you don't do this in a bad way, so that you feel bad, you feel negative, you feel kind of vulnerable or whatever. Or a bit vulnerable is okay, but at least not negative states of mind coming up. Make sure that you do it in such a way that it leads to something positive. That is when you're doing it right. Then you can also use this contemplation of death as a meditation tool. Do it in a meditation practice. Sometimes you may find that you come back, you sit down, you feel restless, you feel agitated, ill at ease. What do? Try to think about death. Remind yourself that you could die. Remind yourself that you may not have that much further to go. And see what happens if you do that before your meditation practice takes off. Before you start your meditation practice. And if you do that, and if it works again, because, as I mentioned before, the reflection of death tends to make you abandon your desires. How can you have desires when you know that death could be right around the corner? So because it helps you to ban your desires, abandon any negativity, irritation, or ill will you have, how can you have ill will if you're about to die? Because of that, it can make you peaceful very fast if you do it correctly. And this is another story which Ajahn Brahm likes to tell and which many of you have probably heard before anyway, but it's still a very nice story. And this is the story of Ashoka and Ashoka's brother. And for those of you who don't know, Ashoka was the great emperor of India about 150 to 200 years after the Buddha lived. He became the emperor of India. And that emperor Ashoka, he was ruled over the largest Indian empire that probably has ever existed. And part of that empire was what is now Afghanistan, Pakistan, maybe parts of Central Asia, and maybe even what is now Bangladesh. It was a very, very large continent. And at some stage during his life, he converted to become a Buddhist after a very violent campaign against the neighboring states. He became a Buddhist rather than being a Hindu, which was the standard in those days. Then, of course, as all converts to a new religion, he became very keen on this Buddhism. And when you're very keen, you want to help others. You want to convert others and say, oh, Buddhism is the most wonderful thing in the world. It was a bit like when I first started off as a monk, I tried to tell my family that this is the way to go. This, you know, forget about everything else. This is the path to go. And all converts, I think, we're all a bit like that. We want to show how wonderful this is. It's just a natural thing that that's how we are. It's just the enthusiasm that comes and without the experience, understanding how actually people find the faith in a new religion or a new philosophy. But anyway, Ashoka was in exactly that same situation. And he looked at his brother and he saw, well, my brother is a bit of a hedonist. He just likes to enjoy himself, and he doesn't take life seriously enough. He doesn't think about the future. He doesn't think about what's going to happen after he dies. He doesn't reflect properly about what is much more important than just enjoying yourself. So he decided he was going to play a trick on Ashoka, on his brother. He decided, I'm going to teach my brother a lesson of the Dhamma to make him wake up to the realities of life. So he schemed with one of his ministers, and one day while he was taking a bath, he made his minister take his brother out for a walk, walking past the bathhouse. And as they walked past the bathhouse, of course, there were all the clothes of the emperor and all the regalia, all the kind of the kingly emperor things that the emperor wears. And the minister says to Ashoka's brother, well, here is all the regalia and all the robes of the king. You should try it on. And the brother says, no, I can't try it on. It's a capital offense to try it on. Can't do that. So the minister says, well, you never know. Ashoka is older than you are. He might die before you. It's good to know if the robe fits so that you can just take it over straight away just in case something happens with your brother Ashoka. So eventually Ashoka's brother is persuaded that he should try it on. And just as he's got the robe on, all the regalia, all the marks of the king on him, at that point Ashoka comes out of the bath and says, ha, what are you doing putting on the king's robe and the king's regalia? You know that it is a capital offense. How can you act in this way? And the brother tries to explain, of course, but King Ashoka says, well, the law says that this is a capital punishment, so I'm going to have to set an example for the kingdom. I'm going to have to treat you just like everybody else. So Ashoka says to his brother, but because you are the brother of the emperor, you have a special privilege. You have 7 days before I will execute you. And in those 7 days, you can enjoy all the pleasures of the palace. And of course, a big palace of the greatest emperor who has ever lived in India. You can imagine the pleasures were probably enormous. You can enjoy yourself to the max in those 7 days. And then, at the end of 7 days, I will execute you because you have committed a capital crime, capital offense. So after 7 days, Ashoka asks his brother to be sent for, and the brother gets taken in front of Ashoka, and Ashoka says to him, well, your day has come, today is your execution, have you at least enjoyed yourself over the last 7 days? And of course, Ashoka's brother says, how can I enjoy myself? How can I indulge myself in sensual pleasures when I know that death is just around the corner? All I was worried about death. I couldn't think straight. I certainly couldn't enjoy myself. And of course, then Ashoka says, well, what difference does it make if it's 7 days, 7 weeks, 7 months, 7 years, or even 70 years? Life is a very short thing. Life passes just like that. How can we just waste our time just enjoying ourselves, just indulging in life without thinking further ahead than that? And that was the beautiful lesson that Ashoka taught his brother. I'm not sure what happened after that, but that was essentially the story. And this is how we should also think. We should think, well, life is indeed short. Ask anybody who is much older than you are, ask them if life is long or life is short. And everybody will say, I can almost absolutely guarantee it, life has gone so much faster than they ever had thought in their wildest dreams. I think just of myself, the last 20 years, they seem to have just disappeared into nothingness. Feels like I was a student only yesterday. And yet over 20 years have passed since my student days. Absolutely amazing, absolutely remarkable. And because of this, of course, it makes us change our mind, change our way of looking at things, and we do things differently. So use this in your meditation practice and see what happens when you meditate, when you remind yourself of death, and see if you can abandon the desires, the anger, the negativity, all these things that make us restless, make us tight, make us tense, make us agitated, and see if then you can find the peace and sit down peacefully and actually enjoy the meditation. See if that works for you. It's a beautiful way of starting a meditation practice, if you can do it. Like with all meditation, you have to keep practicing this for a while. It's not going to work straight away. These things, like everything else, it takes a while to get used to this kind of thinking. It takes a while to get it going, to make it work for you. But if you can do it, it is very, very worthwhile. And it can be a very powerful technique. to make yourself peaceful. So that is a little bit about how to use the idea of death in your daily life, in your meditation practice, to help you to practice the spiritual path, to make it go faster, to make it be a more powerful path that you're practicing. But before I stop, I also want to talk a little bit about the reality of death itself. Because so far it's been more the theory or the more the kind of the idea of death, how to use that idea in a skillful way. But what about actual death? What is the right way of dealing with death itself? It has always occurred to me, and I think this is obviously the case for most people, death is one of those very difficult times in life. Most people find it very hard, and most people, nobody really looks forward to the moment of dying. And because it is so hard, because it can be so difficult, it's important to be well prepared for the time of death. How can we be well prepared for death? And there's three things that I think are maybe the most difficult things about dying. And there are maybe more things as well. But the first thing which is difficult, of course, that if you get very old, the body starts to fall apart in a very bad way as you're approaching death. That is the first thing. The second thing about death which is difficult is that we have to give up pretty much everything around us, everything we own, all our friends, our family, even our own body, we're going to have to give up at the point of death. This is the second thing which is so difficult about it, the fact that we have to leave pretty much everything behind. It challenges our attachments when that happens. And the last thing about death which is difficult is the fact that we are going into the unknown. We don't know what's going to happen next. Is life just going to come to an end? Is it going to just be we die and then there's nothing happening after that? Is there going to be a rebirth? Are we going to meet our Creator and stay with our Creator until eternity? We just don't know what's going to happen. It's all this very uncertain, basically. We have no idea. And that is a little bit, of course, not a little bit, it's quite frightening that we don't know these things. So these are the three things. And the first one of these, with the body falling apart, I remember reading a book a few years ago. It was called The How We Die by an American doctor called Sherwin Newlin, I think, something like that. And this book was a bestseller in the U.S. for many, many years, maybe not many years, but it certainly was a bestseller anyway. And this explained in quite graphic detail what actually happens when we are about to die, particularly when we die of old age. And it is quite remarkable what actually happens when we are dying. Sometimes we think that, oh, I'm going to be one of those people who just passes away nicely in my sleep. I will pass away, and that will be the end of it. There won't be any more problems. But the reality is that the vast majority of people, death is a very difficult physical process to go through. Over the last, I think I heard somewhere a statistic that the last 6 months of a person's life is where they incur 90% of their lifetime medical costs. Something like that. Because the body starts to fall apart. Your eyes fall apart, your hearing falls apart, your limbs, your legs, your arms fall apart, your internal organs don't work properly anymore, and you need enormous amounts of care. Of course, there is the indignity of having other people looking after everything, all your bodily functions, everything, the sense of being dependent on somebody else 100%. Some people find all these things very, very difficult. And it's important to realize this, that death is usually not a very pretty thing. It's usually something which is traumatic, particularly if we have a lot of attachment to the physical body. So what do we do then? How can we get out? How can we minimize this problem if we know that this is our future? And the answer is that instead of taking refuge in the physical body, we have to take refuge somewhere else. Instead of spending enormous amounts of time looking after the physical body, and I know this is a standard thing in modern society, of course, we look after the physical body, We train it, we look after it, we want to stay thin, we build up muscles, we go jogging, we go practicing, we put on makeup, we dress it nicely, we go to the hairdresser, all these kind of things, just to look nice. And that's fine, but be careful, because these things also show the attachment, our identification with this physical body. So what we have to do is move that identification instead into the realm of the mind. Because the mind is something that is not affected by the death process in the same way as the physical body is. Or at least it doesn't have to be. And the beautiful thing then, of course, what we then have to do is to make sure that if we practice a good life here and now, if we do a bit of meditation practice, if we practice compassion and kindness to ourselves and the people around us, then we build up something beautiful inside of us. Something nice, something stable, something which is, when we come to our deathbed, something we can take, go back to, and we can find a refuge in. So when the body falls apart, we have somewhere else we can go inside of us and find a sense of peace and detachment and not care so much about the indignities and the problems of the physical body. So that is what we have to do. And this is just another way of reminding ourselves of the importance of the spiritual path in this life, because it helps us deal with a very difficult situation at the end of life. And of course, it is very similar with the second problem I was talking about, the second problem being the attachments that we have, all the attachments that we are forced to let go of when we face our death, the attachments to our family, to our friends, to our possessions, to our own physical body. All these things come up when we die. Now, the stronger those attachments are, the more difficult it is to go through the dying process, because we are forced to abandon the attachments, whether we want to or not. So, we are very wise if instead of waiting till the deathbed, we actually start to abandon some of those attachments right here, right now. How do we do that? Well, you don't do it through willpower. You don't do it by saying, I don't want to be attached anymore. The way you do it is by developing the spiritual path. Like I mentioned before, do what is good, avoid what is bad, and purify the mind. And by just doing that, there is an automatic detachment which happens through practicing the spiritual path. So again, to avoid the sense of clinging and attachment and desires which might be there on the deathbed, again, develop the mind, make the mind beautiful, have a refuge inside of yourself, a beautiful place you call home, a place you can go, you can feel at peace, you can feel at ease, and you feel this is the true me, this is where I can rest, this is where, and I think it was Ajahn Chah who said that the true home is the peaceful mind, the mind which is at ease and at peace. That is our true home, because that is where we can find a real sense of refuge until we go even further on the spiritual path. And lastly, it is the big unknown of death. Where are we going in the future? Are we going to a rebirth somewhere? Is it all going to end? Well, from a Buddhist point of view, of course, you're going on to a new rebirth, unless you're fully enlightened. And even if you think that maybe there isn't any rebirth, I ask you, please consider that actually we don't really know what is happening. So because we don't know, please take into account the fact that maybe there is a rebirth out there. If you have a sense that the Buddha was a very powerful spiritual master who lived 2,500 years ago, that is certainly my feel, that he was a very special human being. If you have that sense, then just the fact that the Buddha said that there is rebirth is something worth taking, is a reason why we should take this idea seriously. And of course, again, if we take it seriously, even if we may not give it 100% credence, we shouldn't really give it 100% credence, because we don't know. We should just keep an open mind. But the fact that it is possible should give us a sense of alarm. Okay, I better make sure that I do myself, if I'm going to get reborn, well, at least make it a good rebirth. Make sure I don't get reborn in a negative state, in a negative way. And when you do that, of course, again, the answer to that, the answer to the how we get reborn in a good way, of course, again, is the spiritual path. To make sure that we purify the mind, that the mind is a beautiful thing inside of us where we feel at ease, we feel relaxed, we feel a sense of self-esteem, we feel good about ourselves. And then when the body falls away, you are right there, right then. You are already in a good destination because you have made a pure and beautiful mind for yourself. And that, of course, is also how you go to a good destination in the future. So you can see here that all the problems that come with dying, all the difficulties that we have, they're all basically solvable through this one thing, the practicing of the spiritual life. And this is just one other reason for reminding yourself that unless we do that duty in our life, we do the spiritual practice, it is going to be difficult when we come to our end of our life, and we may even face further difficulties after we die. And remember just briefly what that spiritual practice is. The spiritual practice is not doing any particular kind of job or being any particular kind of relationship or living in any particular kind of lifestyle. It is not what we do that is important, but it is how we live our life that is important. What are the intentions? What are the motivations behind our actions? What is it that drives us? That is what matters, not what we do, but how we do things. It is the how that makes a life spiritual, not the what. And when you think like that, then there's always lots of scope for change, lots of scope for living in a better, more caring, kinder, more compassionate way, and thereby making sure you increase your own happiness and also the happiness of the people and the world around you. Okay, so that is the talk for this evening. So before we, I think there's a special surprise coming shortly because it's Christmas Day. So before we have the special surprise, are there any questions or anything anybody wants to add or comment on or say? Please feel free to say anything you like. This is your chance. Any more questions about the bhikkhuni or the ordination question, anything like that is also welcome if you want to do that. Anybody who's about to die here maybe? Who has some reflections they want to share? Okay. Yeah. Maybe we should all put our hand up to that question. Yeah, Peter? Yeah, that's a good one. I've heard that one before as well. Yeah, yeah. Nobody dies wishing that they had spent more time in the office. Yeah, that's true, actually. Yeah, I should actually. There was one more thing I wanted to say, which I forgot to say in my talk. Yeah, and that was a beautiful. I met a Sri Lankan man when I went to Brisbane a couple of years ago. And this Sri Lankan man, we were talking about death as well, and he said something, gave some very beautiful thing that he was doing every day when he left the house going for work. And he said to me that every day as he was leaving the house, he thought to himself that today I may not come back to see my wife and children, my family. I could die today. So because I could die today, I have to make sure I leave the house in a good way, saying the nice things, making sure I don't argue as the last thing I do when I leave the house. I thought that was a beautiful way of using this death contemplation, to remind yourself that you never know when it's going to come. So it's always good to act in a nice way, particularly to those people who are close to us, who are our loved ones, who we may often take for granted, and may not always treat with maybe the kind of respect that they deserve. I'm not criticizing anybody. This is just the nature of family life, that this is how things often are.